The views expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. Listener discretion is advised.
Industry.
Of course,
invention.
Industry. Exactly. But they're not in doing it. Why aren't they doing it?
Well, you can't keep attacking.
Stem cell research.
You can't keep attacking.
Stem cell research.
Oh, God, you're hitting me. Please, Bill.
I've got to because
I've
got to get back.
I'm just an actor.
Yeah, Bill Shatner going about stem cell research with the right-wing John Voight, the father.
Really?
Yeah.
Shatner and John Voight?
Yeah. He's got a new talk show, Bill does, on the Bio Channel in the United States. I don't know whether we'll ever see it here, but it looks like where Bill's going one-on-one with people.
My goodness.
Yeah, good old Bill.
Jeez, I don't know. Well,
so we're back just to introduce.
Yeah, Liz is bringing up some good points.
Yeah.
Let her say some more.
That's all right. I just want to just say to the audience who have come back from that long break that this is the show that airs from 8:30 till 10:30 on a Sunday morning. We've been almost totally absorbed in calls from our listeners who've been pent up from the 3 weeks that I was out of town, and we're back with Bob.
Community radio.
Yeah, Bob.
Our callers are
that's
the
right.
content.
And Bob Dobbs is with us from Hawaii, and Liz, a local caller.
Yeah,
now Liz, I've heard you for years. You talk about being host of radio.
Hold on. Can you hear Bob?
Yes, I can, and I wish we'd stop talking over each other.
Yeah, you know, it's. Yes. I understand.
Bob. Say something to Liz.
Yes. Okay, Bob, just a second. I just want to tell people, because I had experience the past week in phoning into the show last week, it's impossible, practically, to hear the telephone callers if you're on the phone. For instance, Bob probably has a very, very difficult time hearing Liz. Is that correct, Bob?
Sometimes. Not all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, I'm going to try and turn her up a bit, so just to, as much as I can. So, who's going to go first?
Okay, I want to say something here, because this has not been said. Liz has a stigma as part of our audience for being nuts because she claims she's under house arrest. And I always thought that was a very appropriate metaphor. We're all under this software tyranny, under house arrest. And that's why we're not getting any sex, or the sex we want. And Liz is correct. I mean, I don't know how literally she takes it, but it's good enough for me, that phrase. So, Liz, you have any... Oh, and the other point is... So if you think that Daniel's better than me, understand that I'm under very hard hearing conditions. It's very hard to interact. If I was there in the studio, it would be maybe a lively, more violent show than you're experiencing. But Greg's just pointing out the fantastic job I do under these ridiculous conditions.
Yeah, it's horrible. Really. I struggled to hear people that were phoning in last week. It was just terrible.
Okay, Liz.
Well, first of all, as to you being better than Daniel... I don't want to address that because I don't think that that's my place. I don't think that I'm going to dictate what Greg does with his show.
Well, it's not a matter.
You bring different attributes and skills, quite obviously, to the show and different knowledge and all that other stuff. So it depends on my mood.
Also,
I think more people have gotten used to you. And
no,
you've got a different relationship with Greg and a different synergy.
Yeah, it was like when Bill Murray came and replaced Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live, I think. It's like people, it's not that, and, you know, Chevy left on his own accord. And as I said earlier, as I made clear, Daniel decided he needed to focus his attentions on the executive producing of the program. I mean, you have no idea of the notes I get after the show.
Oh, I'm sure, right? But it was a different kind of synergy, and hey, understood if he had things to do. It's amazing how attached in this virtual kind of world people get.
Yep.
Yeah,
to
we were
certain
yeah.
things, and they develop this sense of bonding.
Well, we were very Daniel and I were used to working together and working as a team on the air. It's. That bond was there too. So it's because of that bond that it's extended out to the audience as well.
Well, yeah, but it's amazing, you know, how people get attached to something, right?
Yeah.
And they don't even realize it, and at times you don't even realize it. But I just want to go back to an earlier comment that I made in terms of this new budget and, you know, this great big thing of putting us all back to work. Yes, I think it's important because there are also many people that don't consider me nuts. They may consider me ill and unhealthy because they can understand why anyone who has no privacy whatsoever and cannot express their emotions in first person would be ill. But yes, for this great big global surveillance camp that they have us in and they're going to put us back to work in, I guess Jack Layton should at least be getting his flat tax, eh?
Back to Jack Layton again, huh?
Well, you know, I mean, he should be getting something considering how censored he is. He should be getting something for it.
Yeah.
For us. I should correct that. For us. For him, for us.
I mean,
in terms of how they fight for us.
You, him, and Olivia Chow.
Well, no. I wouldn't bring Olivia into this.
No, okay. I'll keep her out of it.
Yeah, she's not the leader. She's just, like the big sister to the big brother.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing in this, But, the budget is coming down on Family Reading Day, I believe, in Toronto. And then we're going to have Freedom to Read Week, February the 22nd. And, of course, we're going to pull all the stops as to how we're, fighting for democracy and literacy. And, of course, in Canada, we're fighting not just for Palestinian democracy, but Israeli democracy.
Well, they're a fantastic democracy, that Israel.
Yes, it's just amazing what the GPS system did for this war, didn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's good technology.
Yeah, we're just moving right along. We're testing new technology. We're proving that it works.
Yeah, we have a three-week binge where we destroy an entire place, and then we get a feeling of how long it takes to build it all up again.
Yeah.
If it can be.
Yeah, and we just, do this repeatedly, and we just continue, and then we'll just do it all over again.
Well, Liz, I'm going to go. I have some. I have to get to some stories that I want to get to,
okay,
but thank you for phoning today.
And thank you as well, and Happy New Year.
Yes.
And I just want to thank also everyone who has actually been supporting me directly without fear, without worrying about talking to me, mentioning my name, and dealing with me directly as opposed to the way a coward would.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, you're still...
Here's the update on the portal.
Yeah.
So he says, am I calling for an old folks home? And I say, what's an old folks home? Know me. He says, a home for old crusters like you. I said, do you realize how youthful I look? He goes, I know, old man. Then I said, I wouldn't be allowed in an old farts home. Dump that for now. I'll say that, Greg.
That's fine. That's fine. That's what he's saying. You're quoting what he's saying. Have to put it in context.
No, I said I wouldn't be allowed in an old person's home because I look so young.
Oh, right, okay.
And I said, thanks to many things, including my wife. I will probably live another 122 years. Then he goes, what's his name? And I go, who's name? And that's where we're at right now.
Oh, dear. It's getting ugly there. Well, you carry on with that, Bob, as I talk about someone who died at the age of 88, and the couple of people died, both sort of shocking and had some intersections with each other, I suppose, in a strange way. Ricardo Montalban, the debonair concierge, best known for his role by contemporary audiences or fairly contemporary audiences of the show Fantasy Island. He died last week in Los Angeles. And poor Ricardo Montalban was one of the – he was stricken and because of an injury, evidently, that he had in the early 50s. On a film set when he got run over by a horse and fell off a horse and then was his spine was injured. And this troubled him through his entire career. And eventually, for the last 15 years of his life, he was confined to a wheelchair. And I'm going to take this call, though. I don't know why, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I didn't know I was on.
Yeah, you're on.
I just wanted to submit the real reason that Daniel is no longer on the air.
All right, go ahead.
The real reason that Daniel is no longer on the air is because back in October, I believe, in the height of all the Palin mania, and I called him a monster. And it kicked off about a couple hours of negative phone calls towards.
Be fair here. Some people did phone in and and supported that.
And
you would do acknowledge that there were some people that phoned in and weren't negative?
No, I acknowledge that he did get some supportive calls.
Yeah.
But the ego in me tells me that more people were supporting my view. And he did mention my ego on that show before he cut me off, which was like the first of two or three times.
Well, he didn't cut you off because I would have been controlling the board that day. And if you were indeed cut off, and I don't remember you were, but if you were, yeah. it would have been me who or was Benai that did that.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it was you.
Yeah.
Again,
we do the show together, you know.
Well, yeah, I realize. Well, you used to.
Oh, we still do.
So you're still there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, see this.
So you think that you, because you think somehow that the point of this program is that we are going on and saying things and holding views that are popular, right? That we're looking for popularity, that we're looking to look like the consensus is always with us.
No, I don't think you're trying to be popular at all.
There you go. I'm not saying that that we're acting to be unpopular. It's just that you think that you haven't really implied
suggesting that he is now questioning what it is that he really wants to say to people. Not that he's trying to be popular. I don't think either of you or Bob is out there trying to win a homecoming contest.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that he really just wants to take some time to edit what he says before he comes out and says it.
Well,
and that maybe things that he wants to say maybe are not right. Maybe there are people out there that were listening that day, and somebody whose opinion that he really respects told him, said, "Hey, listen, I heard what you were saying on the radio, and that's not cool."
You said that you knew what the reason was. You're speculating what the reason is, just to be clear, right?
I'm speculating.
Yeah, okay.
But it seems highly coincidental. You're right. I don't know. I've never met you or Daniel.
Right.
I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. Well, he will be reviewing the program, and I'll we'll get his maybe get his views if he wishes to be involved in this. All right.
Very well.
Well, thank you very much. All right.
Well, let me just respond quickly before we go on to your story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Liz's call and that call, people think there are humans involved here. You know, they're projecting anthropomorphically reasonable humans. They don't know that, you know, Israel's not run by humans. There's something else going on there. And then they also think Daniel's your average human person. Daniel isn't. Daniel is, I'm not going to say he's wrong or right or crude or cult. Daniel is different, maybe because of where he came from and interfacing with this culture. But he does not have those kind of concerns or emotions. He does not reflect on what people advise him.
Right. Okay, so getting back to Ricardo Montalban. Ricardo Montalban died, and I liked Ricardo Montalban.
Was he the aristocratic kind of guy?
Yes. In fact, here's what I think what Ricardo Montalban was best known for in a certain generation. He's been known multi-generationally because he's had a very, very long career in motion pictures, dating from the 1940s. And here, I believe, this is what a huge number of people would remember Ricardo Montalban best for, ironically.
I know my own needs. And what I need from an automobile, I know I get from this new Cordova. I could ask for nothing beyond the quality of Cordova's workmanship, the tastefulness of its appearance. I request nothing beyond the thickly cushioned luxury of seats available even in soft Corinthian leather. Yet it is on the highway where Cordova best answers my demands.
So now Ricardo's driving this car. Beautiful photography, helicopter photography of the car winding its way through the seaside of California.
I have much more in this small Chrysler than great comfort at a most pleasant price. I have great confidence, for which there can be no price. In Cordova, I have what I need.
Isn't that great?
That's pretty interesting, Greg.
Yeah, that's great. Did you like that? Do you remember about Corinthian leather? Corinthian leather. You're on the air.
Yeah, can I respond to the last caller? And this will be my last call, Greg.
Yes, okay. Very good, Dave, too.
I think with Daniel, it might be something to do with the fact that for years and years he came in with you, Greg, and did his job on time every day he was scheduled for free in a place where people hated him. And then they tried to get rid of him, and you guys had to sue to come back to do your job for free where people hated you. I think that might have something to do with it.
No, Daniel loves that kind of energy.
That's one theory, Dave, too. So we'll add that one in. Thanks a lot.
And thank you, too, Greg.
You're welcome. Hey, thank me. So that was 1975, and Ricardo Montalban became synonymous with the hitherto unknown or vaguely known Corinthian leather. Now, here is Ricardo Montalban 4 years later. Now, unfortunately, he doesn't mention Corinthian leather in this commercial. Why, I don't know. But here he is, Ricardo Montalban, doing another Chrysler Cordoba ad.
Wait till you see what they did to my car.
With the Cordoba, we went back to the drawing boards. We wanted to get the gas mileage up, but not at the expense of the styling.
Introducing the totally redesigned Chrysler Cordoba. All the luxury you expect is here. But so is gas mileage. You can have high style and good mileage. The new Cordoba proves it. I like what they've done to my car.
But, I mean, the first one, the 1975 one, there's a certain elegance to that commercial. This one, you can tell, times are getting harder in the United States. And, you know, Ricardo Montalban is struggling to keep any type of
elegance.
His elegance, his debonair, yeah, his poise. Again...
The subconscious thing here is that he does reflect every Westerner's desire to be an aristocrat. That's the hidden agenda here.
Ricardo Montalban, a few years after that, reprised his role that he had done in the 60s television program Star Trek. He reprised a role that he portrayed in a guest one episode. And this was a fantastic movie, I think, directed by Nicholas Meyer, a really wonderful director. I don't know what he's done lately, but he'd done quite a few interesting films before, I think Time After Time with Malcolm McDowell. And Montalban reprised his role as Khan. And again, it's sort of surprising that they would have picked that story out of all of the stories that were done in the original Star Trek series and pulled that one out to make a feature film of. When it was sort of debatable whether the Star Trek franchise was going to make it in terms of being on the big screen. They'd made Star Trek the motion picture at great expense, and it hadn't really done that well. And it had been sort of a critical, at the time anyway, was not that critically acclaimed. But they made The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Here are some clips of what really was a remarkable performance by Ricardo Montalban, I think, in a very, very good film. Here is Ricardo Montalban with William Shatner.
I shall leave you as you left me, as you left her, marooned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet. Buried alive. Buried alive.
Indeed, this film may be William Shatner at his best, too. This, again, is from Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, Ricardo Montalban, the great Ricardo Montalban.
Is it possible that comm system has failed?
It would explain a great many things.
They're requesting communications, sir.
What's happening here is that there's another starship in the fleet called the Reliant, and Ricardo Montalban has somehow taken control of this vessel, and his his mission, essentially, his self-proclaimed mission, is to take revenge on Captain Kirk for this, things that happened back in this episode from 1966, of course, which happened in the future. But anyway, here we go with Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner, and Ricardo Montalban and others.
Let them meet static.
They're still running with shields down.
Of course, we are one big happy fleet. Ah, Kirk, my old friend. Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us revenge is a dish that is best served cold?
It is very cold in space.
Now, what happens is that Kirk doesn't know that Khan is in this ship, and for some reason, and I can't remember why, he lets the ship come very, very close and lives to regret it for the time being.
The Quilly missions are normal.
They still haven't raised their shields.
Raise ours.
Their shields are going up.
Lock phasers on target.
Locking phasers on target.
They're locking phasers.
Raise shields.
Fire!
The Enterprise is hit, and this now is the finale of Star Trek to Wrath of Khan.
To order Reliant to lower her shield.
Assuming he hasn't changed the combination, he's quite intelligent.
15 seconds, Admiral.
You ever seen this movie, Bob?
No.
Really? It's great.
Khan, how do we know you'll keep your word? Well, I've given you no word to keep by. In my judgment, you simply have no alternative.
I see your point. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Now, Bill Shatner has figured out that he knows how to, because he has such extensive knowledge of starships, he knows how to bring down the shields of the Reliant, because the Enterprise is just a sitting duck, but Khan doesn't know that he can do that.
Lock phasers on target and await my command.
Phasers locked.
Time's up, Admiral.
Here it comes. Now, Mr. Spock.
Sir, our shields are dropping.
Raise them!
I can't!
Where's the override? The override!
Fire.
Fire! Fire! Fire!
We can't fire, sir!
Why can't you?
They've damaged the proton control and the warp drive. We must withdraw.
No!
Sir,
no.
We must!
So Captain Kirk wins again. You're on the air.
Yeah, you always got to have a manual override. It's a fundamental engineering mistake.
That's right.
Well, I actually like Bob, but I hate having to admit it, of course, you know.
You like who?
I like Bob.
You like Bob, yeah.
But I don't like having to admit it. So, like, how does the Heisenberg compensator work, Bob?
Excellent point. It relates to the conversation here on the community chat. So he says, what's his name? I go, whose name? He goes, your lover's. I say, duh. I say, I am black. He goes, house or field? I say, discarnate, tactile. You can't answer that, can you? I say to him. He writes back, ask Greg to play the George Takei / Kid Chris phony phone call. You know what that is, Greg?
No.
George
no, I don't.
Takei, T-A-K-A-I.
Takei. Decay, it's not, that's the, that's Sulu in Star Trek. I think I know who you're talking to there. I think I know who you're talking to.
Okay, back to our caller. So
yeah, yeah.
I'm telling this guy that by black I mean discarnate and tactile. That's the Heisenberg complexity, where the physical body cannot comprehend the environment where he is everywhere at once, and you people are back inside us too. This is the software tyranny that Liz was referring to. That is, so the physicists just come up with concepts reflecting the material conditions we live under.
So you don't understand your quantum mechanics or your Star Trek either, do you?
That's why you love me.
You know what the correct answer is? It works very well, thank you.
I'm not mentally correct.
Anyways, there's no such thing as a persistent self. Reality is an illusion, albeit a persistent one.
No, it's not an illusion. It's not an illusion. It is solid. It is forever, and that's pretty real.
You don't believe it in the bit?
No. James Joyce wrote a whole book called All for a Bit, Punning on Alphabet, called
Well, that is
Wake.
Certainly a unique tangent. I don't know how you get on it. Okay, well, anyways, I thought I'd fess up that
answers.
I find you amusing.
You just go out being puzzled. I give you the answers, and then you say, oh, I don't know what that gets. Well,
I don't
answer.
Know if I can take you seriously sometimes or not.
All right, well, take this seriously, will you?
If you have done it to the least of one of these my brethren, you've done it to me.
I'm Ron Wilson, coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, with some winning strategies for an off-ice issue, sober driving. Whether you're heading out after a game, out on the town, or just hanging out with friends, always have a plan for a safe ride home for yourself, your family, and your friends. Your winning strategies could include a taxi, a designated driver, or public transit. Help shut out impaired driving.
OSID and the Beer Store want you to arrive alive. Drive sober.
The views expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, I don't care what you're in. If you've been doing that, you repent right now. Don't you even let this message go 5 more seconds. You repent right now. That is a sin. You have no business judging anybody.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You have no business, yes?
I think we should make a thing. The views and expressions of this radio show, we're not sure whether we should take them seriously or not. Why should they quit like that?
Yeah, well, I don't have control over that, unfortunately.
Okay,
so getting back to
that caller, yeah. I like that caller. He raises good questions, but showing the nature of the meeting, we cannot pursue it. We cannot get into anything and match on conceptual or ideas. That's the problem. We get interrupted.
I know, by that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, I just want to play this one. I had another clip from Star Trek II that I had out of order. Let me just play this, see if it's any good.
The commander of the Reliant is signaling. He wishes to discuss terms of our surrender.
Put it on screen. Do it. While we still have time.
On screen, sir.
Again, we're talking about Ricardo Montalban. Come. Here he is.
You still remember, Admiral. I cannot help but be touched. I, of course, remember you.
What is the meaning of this attack? Where is the crew of the Reliant?
Surely I have made my meaning plain. I mean to avenge myself upon you, Admiral. I deprived your ship of power, and when I swing around, I mean to deprive you of your life. But I wanted you to know first who it was who had beaten you. Come.
If it's me you want, I'll have myself beamed aboard. Spare my crew.
I make you a counter-proposal. I'll agree to your terms if, in addition to yourself, you hand over to me all data and material regarding the project called Genesis.
Genesis? What's that?
Don't insult my intelligence, Kirk.
Give me some time to recall the data on our computers.
I give you 60
seconds. It's 60 seconds. You're on the air.
William Shatner's nickname is The Shat.
Yeah?
Yeah. Peace.
Okay.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah.
Listening to these things, you saw those shows years ago before you took over the awesome role of hosting this International Connection.
True.
But listening to it, it sounds like your interactions with management.
Yeah, I know. I don't think that isn't lost on me. Here's Ricardo Montalban in the opening theme, with the opening theme of Fantasy Island, a program that he did just a few years after that. And
Morrissey Kellen stuff.
Fantasy Island. Welcome to Fantasy Island.
The plane.
Good morning, boss.
Good morning, Tattoo. Let's go.
There it is. That's how he played out later days. Fairly easy role, I guess. Here's Ricardo Montalban doing car commercials even later in his career.
Chrysler knows the competition is good, so they gave New Yorker turbo power and more standard features than Olds 98. Gave LeBaron graceful new lines and more standard features than Buick Century. Gave Fifth Avenue so much luxury. It has better resale value than Cadillac DeVille. And Chrysler gave all its cars Chrysler protection. The competition is good. Chrysler had to be better.
Only Chrysler Plymouth gives you real American values with $500 or $1,000.
So Ricardo Montalban started his career in the 1940s, and he had a whole career in Mexico. That's where he's originally born. He was born in 1920, moved to Los Angeles as a teenager to live with his older brother, Carlos Montalban, and who was pursuing a career in show business. And Ricardo Montalban returned to Mexico because his mother was dying, and then he became a star there. And
he became a star in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. He made his Hollywood debut in 1947 in Fiesta, a musical in which he was cast as an aspiring toreador with a twin sister, improbably played by the movie star Esther Williams. They also starred together a year later on an Island with You. And Esther Williams married the other Latin star, it'll come to me in a moment, Fernando Lamas.
Then he went back to Mexico.
No. He had a career. He made a dozen Spanish language films.
So he was scouted in Mexico. Like in hockey, he was scouted. He was in the farm system.
Yeah, I guess so. And then, so he made quite a lot of films. But he rebelled against being sort of typecast or the way that Latin people were treated in films, and he set up an organization to hopefully to make changes in that particular area.
And, a year.
That was later on in his career. He did that.
Yeah, after Marlon Brando did it for the Native Americans.
I guess so, but not. Yeah, you're on the air.
Good morning, you moron.
Hey, hi there.
Hey, I've never got a chance to talk to this guy.
Nice to have
okay,
you here with us.
Have it out, man.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
am I dumb? Am I a moron?
No, I use the singular. Good morning, you moron.
He's trying to divide us, Greg.
Let me add my 2 cents to that caller about 4 or 5 calls ago who said that the real reason that Daniel was turfed off because of his observations about Sarah Palin. Clearly that's true.
Oh.
And there's no doubt that the guy completely went mad and he deserves to be chucked off the radio. On the other hand, The show is a lot less worth listening to without him. Because he was such a madman and went completely berserk in his views, whether it was these dreadful anti-women views, his amazing, not only misogyny, but his whole view of the world was so warped.
His masturbatory fantasy.
That's what made it interesting.
Oh, that's what made it interesting. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And interesting. The good callers, which are very few and far between these days, and I must confess I do listen, and then turn off because it becomes so boring. But the good callers are those people that make it interesting. The, you know, not the Dave Twos or these idiots who talk about their board meetings. Who wants to hear about this navel-gazing and your idiotic diatribe about animation? Boring, boring stuff. There's a world out there which is very interesting, and it's full of anti-this and anti-that. We want to hear them. We want to hear Heather. We want to hear people with opinions. You know, Heather could call in this morning under the guise of a new caller, and you sort of didn't understand that it was Heather calling. Of course,
what do you mean
did.
It wasn't? It was not. You don't know
it
what you're. You don't know.
Heather,
you don't know what you're talking
only
about.
Could come up with such
you
an amazing
don't know.
Guys,
I look, you idiot. Look, you moron. That I know what I'm doing here with regard to that. That was not Heather that was on the air. You moron.
Who cares if it wasn't?
Yes. You seem to care. You seem to care. It was not. I mean, you're making a. How can you play both sides of it? You're saying that it. I didn't recognize it was Heather. And then when I say it wasn't Heather, you go, well, who cares?
Well, I mean, it's irrelevant because you're just trying to hide behind them. So I guess Heather has been banned for some reason. But
wait, you moron. Listen, nobody's been banned. I need a bit of peace here for a moment. I've got control here, just like Captain Kirk. And listen, you moron. Listen, you Zionist, hateful moron. I'm sick of hearing from you. I don't want you ever phoning again.
You are wonderful. Okay.
Oh, no, I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful now, am I? Oh, I thought it was boring before.
You're making decent radio for a change. I mean, it becomes a bit, when it becomes extreme like this, it becomes good radio. And you'll see people will be calling in after me. And that's good for you.
What do you mean good radio? We'll probably get kicked off the air.
No. And since Dobbs has been on the air, it's become even drier than when you're on your own, Greg. He is awful.
Well,
nobody understands a word he says.
No,
you can't understand a word you say,
Dobbs. I'm about to get rid of your little pleasure, you Zionist-stimulated software tyranny.
You see, Zionist has become now a dirty word.
Oh, it's a very dirty word. It's a very dirty word. It's almost, hey, how about this one? It's akin to Nazi.
Yes.
This is good radio.
For using that.
And all you can do, all you guys, Greg, all you can imitate is your heroes, Amy Goodman and Noam Chomsky.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Amy Goodman's no hero of mine. Let me be clear about that. No hero of mine, sir.
Pardon?
Amy Goodman is no hero of mine.
All you do is just parrot what these idiots on the left say all the time.
I don't listen to them. If I'm parroting it, then so be it. But I am not. I'm not listening to them. I don't care about them.
You don't form opinions which are based on logic. You form your opinions which are based on pictures, and it's just absurd. The logic behind your view that Zionism and Nazism is total madness. It's an offense.
Wow, they're involved in racism, both of them.
It's an offense to all free people in the world, and it's an offense to anybody who lives in this community.
Freedom. Hey, what do you have?
And then you hide behind the ignorance of this idiotic joke-making. And this is typical you. Anyway, good luck, guys. And may you have many eggs in your frying pan.
Stay on. Damn guy. He's no stammer. No stammer.
No. He doesn't want to be challenged.
He believed in everything he said.
It is fun to have him on, though. I mean, as much as I said, he's not going to be, you know, that I don't want him on anymore. I want him on. I was lying.
Great. I was just going to say, just before you picked up the call, I was saying, why people find this show interesting is the discontinuity, the diversity of content. You never know what's going to happen next. We were talking about the Israeli bombing. We were talking about the greatest ocean that I'm sitting on the border of. And then we're doing Montalbán, Combacom, whatever his name
is. When does Amy Goodman or Noam Chomsky talk about Montalbán?
Yeah.
When are they caring whether Ricardo Montalban died?
Because it's a diversity. It doesn't matter that we're dull. It's the fact we change topics, you know, amazingly every 10 seconds. That's what the people love about the show.
And listen how, I mean, what causes
they got
him
to hear this? And then you're going to go back and report a new news story. It'll be interrupted by the last previous caller who loves me. I love him. He's talking about the real issues. Then we had Liz. I mean, look at the variety. What is this show about? Nothing.
Right.
And yet everything.
Yeah. I mean, what causes him to phone in? What is it that triggers a call from the Good Morning, You Moron man? He hasn't called in since, I don't know when.
Well, 5 months.
Easily.
Anyway, two years before that.
You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Greg. It's Dave.
Hey, Dave.
That guy's a laugh, man.
You love him, huh?
Well, Zionism definitely is racism. There's no question about it.
I'm glad you agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
This is Dave, but also
at the same time, when you were talking about Israel and the Palestinians, I think what happened also in Gaza happened even before that, because remember when Harper put the sanctions on Palestinians? That really hurt the Palestinians a hell of a lot, you know?
Well, the whole object is to hurt Arab people.
Oh, yeah, big time. You know?
And Persian people.
Yeah,
that is our whole direction and an object.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, they said, okay, there's a ceasefire, great, but are they going to end the occupation? I don't think so. I think the thing is, if they keep negotiating, but, you know, I don't support the Israeli government at all. I don't see them doing anything to make things better for the Palestinians. But at the same time, if somehow something can come out of the negotiations where they can say, okay, yeah, we're going to, you know, a wild scenario, we're going to end the occupation, we're going to dismantle the wall, we're going to get rid of the checkpoints. Now, that's like a fantasy
island.
Exactly. But also what I'm calling
Palestinians,
about...
this is your fantasy.
Okay, Greg, control yourself.
Fantasy to have your country back.
Yeah.
It's so fantastic. This is your fantasy.
Yeah, he was good. We called him all.
Oh, he was fantastic.
That. Also, Patrick McGoohan on the...
Oh, you know what? I'm just about to do that.
Yeah.
Just about to do it.
Really
let me do it now.
What I was going to say is, what's happening... with management. I mean,
I don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about
there
that later.
No management.
Contact me later.
No management.
Now, Dave was the architect of his own getting taken off for a moment here, and only because he read my mind. He said the other person that died, of course, was Patrick McGoohan. Now, I left him.
That's
yes. Yeah.
That's totally relevant to what we're talking about.
It is. I left it for last because Patrick McGoohan was my hero when I was a kid. I loved the show Danger Man, and I saw the hour long ones that were made in the mid '60s, and I don't know what it was about that program, but I loved it. Looking back on it now, it was a very finely made program in terms of scripting and the acting and so on. It has a real Cold War pro-British and pro-American viewpoint, of course.
Patina.
But here are some clips from... I'll talk a little bit about Patrick McGoohan. He was born in the United States to Irish parents. And soon after he was born, they went back to Ireland and then eventually settled in... I think it was in Sheffield, England. And somehow Patrick McGoohan got involved in acting, and he'd had a lot of different jobs but before he became an actor. But he had a remarkable skill for it, and his career ranged from success on the stages of the West End in London to starring in popular spy series, The Secret Agent, which was produced in England. He was critically praised for his King Edward Longshanks in Mel Gibson's 1995 film Braveheart. And he won Emmys as a guest star on Columbo in 1975 and 1990. Now, Peter Falk, who was the producer, I guess, or he was definitely the star of Columbo, he liked working with Patrick McGoohan. But it was The Prisoner that really... I guess Patrick McGoohan will be remembered for. That was his signature role. But going back to Danger Man, here is the opening music of Danger Man, which was called Secret Agent in the United States. The titles were changed and the music was changed. Here is a small clip of the theme that most people in North America are familiar with, especially in the United States. Thank you.
was a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Every move he makes.
So there you have it. The that's the American version of it. But it was, as I said, it was called Danger Man. In,
that was Johnny Rivers?
Yeah, Johnny Rivers. And this, I don't know whether it was written especially for the show, but here is what we saw in Canada, because we saw the British version called Danger Man. And Patrick McGoohan would walk out in negative form, as if, you know, reversed positive and film. And you get this big close-up of his face, and it was really dramatic, little opening.
What was he?
He was John, in the story, Danger Man, he was a secret agent for the British government. His name was John Drake, and he would travel around the world trying to make sure British interests were taken care of. But he was the sort of the low-rent James Bond. He was sort of the gritty, hard, you know, you'd see the nasty side of the spy business with John Drake, the workaday world of the spy rather than the super spy. In fact, when he took on the role of John Drake, one of the things that he called for in his contract before he would do it, and Patrick McGoohan was very strident individual and sure of himself, very confident, even in his early career. And he said that one of the things that he said was that he couldn't ever kiss a woman in it.
He would never kiss a woman in the show?
No, never.
Okay, is the Danger Man the first spinoff of the James Bond fad, which is about 63, 64?
I think that Danger Man might have even preceded the first James Bond film, because they did a series of half-hour Danger Man shows in the early 60s, which I never saw when I was a boy. But when I think when I was around in the early 70s, I guess, the CBC started playing these half-hour shows in the early afternoon, and I got a chance to see them when I would come home from school, so when I was in high school. But when I saw the original Danger Man when I was 8 years old, 9 years old, when it was the same time as Roger Moore in The Saint. In fact, Patrick McGoohan was offered The Saint. He was offered James Bond and refused it. So,
pretty interesting guy. Yeah, the show The Prisoner raises lots of issues. They teach it in college. I mean, it was really resonant with the McLuhan-esque vision.
Yeah, well, here's a clip just to give you an idea of what happened on Danger Man.
We must set a trap. What do we use for bait?
Right now, they're thinking if they can get rid of the girl and me, there'll be no one to identify them and they'll be in the clear.
They're not coming running into a trap with you as bait, John.
No. But they might with the girl. They'll still think they have a hold over her.
You're right. Well, how do we set the trap?
Her apartment. They'll still be watching it. It's their only means of contacting her. Now, because they're frightened, they'll make an extremely cautious approach. Your men mustn't show till the very last second.
Of course. Shall I bring her in?
Yes.
Very well. I'll bring her at home.
Yeah, and it's better if I see her alone.
You will tell her how you intend to use her?
Of course.
Is that necessary?
It is, as far as I'm concerned. She may have been stupid, but she's angry now, and she has courage. This is a chance for her to level up. I think she'll take it.
And he was sort of an ethical spy, I guess you'd say. Or that's how he was portrayed. And
right, and again, the dialogue sounds like your conversations with management.
Maybe.
What they have on the show.
One of my favorite parts of Danger Man was when Patrick McGoohan would put together a gadget. He'd always have things that he'd be putting together with little tiny screwdrivers, and this is the kind of music that you'd hear when that would be going on. And I just love these sections because they were sort of a quiet, slow section in the middle of the action. He's dealing with little screwdrivers and opening stuff up and putting pieces of pipe together, or undoing some innocuous-looking device like a shaver and turning it into something else, a radio transmitter. Anyway, and the trademark harpsichord music.
So are these all on YouTube or something? How do you get this stuff?
I think they're not on YouTube, but they're out on video on DVD now. The Secret Agent shows. So
you have your own set and you just taped it.
Yeah, I have my own set of them, okay. And he went into the third or fourth season of doing Danger Man, a Secret Agent, and which is run in the United States as well. And they filmed two color episodes in the new season, and Patrick McGoohan promptly quit. And they were two miserable episodes, I must say. And he, which was later turned into a feature by Lou Grade, who headed ITV or ATV in England, and Patrick McGoohan came in and said, "Well, Lou Grade said to him, the producer, said, what do you want to do? What can I do? What do you want to proceed with if you don't want to do this?" And he came up with the idea of The Prisoner. And there's a fascinating, on YouTube, speaking of YouTube, if you go and look for Warner Troyer, people might remember his name. He used to be with City TV. There's a fascinating interview of three or four parts with Patrick McGoohan done here in 1975. And you really, I remember seeing that, or 77, I think. And indeed, it was being taught at Seneca College, and they had students there who were invited, small group of people invited to speak with Patrick McGoohan. And you're on the air. Hey,
Greg, I know I said I wasn't going to call.
Yes, you did, yeah.
Is your program over?
No, not quite.
Is that woman going to kind of cruise in late?
I don't know. I'm really not sure. I'm really not sure. We're just carrying on.
I have one last comment, Greg.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, today is my 9/11 now, thanks to you.
What happened?
That guy, that humorist, he referred to me.
He
yes,
did, didn't
right.
he?
The moron guy.
That's right. Revenge. Revenge. Revenge is best
you're
served cold.
You are nothing but nonsense.
It's pretty devastating, you know.
Yeah.
Dave's 9/11.
Oh, he was going at all of us.
Oh, okay.
He just goes at everybody and then says, if somebody isn't there, then that's what made the show.
And he loves the abuse that Daniel represents.
Yeah, yeah. It's always when somebody is gone. When he goes, where's that woman Heather? But he would phone in and complain bitterly. And what I think what he would always want was he wants something to be said on the air that's actionable. And I think it frustrates him. Why he thinks it's boring is that there aren't things said that are actionable at the CRTC level.
Yeah,
he just hates that.
He's into the tactile S&M.
Well, now my wife's afraid for our lives, Greg.
All right,
yeah,
thanks.
The real terrorist called up.
All right. So, anyway.
So, Greg, if we're going to end in a second, I just wanted to show you the prisoner here on the community chat portal.
Yeah.
I said to him, Greg says he knows who you are. And he says, he don't know me. And then he says, if you're going to read this on the air, don't censor it, you Republican coot.
I've hit the button so many times today. It's remarkable.
The funny thing is the guy is feeling, here it is, we're just screaming each other on the community chat portal, and he wants it read properly.
Yeah.
Is he the sense of propriety and property or
yeah.
something?
Yeah, everybody wants no censoring. It's impossible. Let me tell you, it's impossible. In this world, it's technically forbidden not to censor things. So anyway, he went in, Lou Grade, Patrick McGoohan gave Lou Grade the overview about The Prisoner. He had a budget handy, and they signed a deal right there and then. And Lou Grade said the money will be in the bank account on Monday. They had a meeting on a Saturday morning, and the money was in Patrick McGoohan's production company by Monday morning, and they started production on 17, what would become 17 episodes of The Prisoner. And here is The Prisoner opening music. And just moving right along here, here's a classic moment in The Prisoner, and most everybody who's ever seen the show would remember this.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered.
My life is my own.
For official purposes, everyone has a number. Yours is number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Six of one, half a dozen of another.
Is this what they did to you? Is this how they tried to break you till they got what they were after? In your heads must still be the remnant of a brain. In your hearts must still be the desire to be a human being again.
Oh, we don't have to go to that yet.
Great. His dialogue, it's really autobiographical. That's what he probably said to the producers. I'm not a number. I will not succumb to this James Bond nonsense.
Yeah, when he walks into the room, the long shot, when he, in the opening credits, when he walks into the room and he slams down his resignation, the man behind the desk looks remarkably like Lou Grade, the producer, impresario.
As usual, the actors aren't acting, and all of us who are supposedly not actors are acting in the global theater. That's the point. All these movies, but not anybody, they're not acting. They're just being themselves. Jack Nicholson just walks in.
Here's another segment from The Prisoner with Patrick McGoohan.
B, C, D, E, Salem.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, ,6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, 5,
people.
Protect.
People don't protect.
Protect other pop.
Protect other
pop.
People.
Why?
Pop.
Why?
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 Why? Why? Why? Pop.
Pop.
Pop. Why? Pop.
Goes the weasel. Half a
why?
Pound of
why? Why? Right. Why?
Half
why?
A pound of
why?
Why?
Pretty avant-garde, huh?
Awesome, awesome. That just sounds like our show.
Here's another
dialogue.
Here's another segment from The Prisoner.
Why, Drake? Why?
Society is a place where people exist together.
Yes, sir.
Society is a place where people exist together.
Yes, sir.
That is civilization.
Yes, sir.
The lone wolf belongs to the wilderness.
Yes, sir.
You must not grow up to be a lone wolf.
No, sir.
You must conform.
Yes, sir.
It is my sworn duty to see that you do conform.
Yes, sir.
You will take six.
Six.
Of the best.
I'm not guilty, sir.
10!
12.
What? 12, sir. So that I can remember.
He was number six. That was the number that he was given by his masters. You're on the air.
Yeah, why didn't you ask the moron guy for his financial advice? We need some stock tips. I'm sure he's all-knowing.
Yeah. Please phone in again, even though I told you never to phone in again. I think that we're... I'm going to play the end theme now because I think that we're nearing the end of the program. Yes, there it is for another week. Thank you, Bob, for being here. Again, we'll miss Patrick McGoohan. I was really shocked when I heard on the BBC that he had died. It really hit me because I was such a big fan of that program. And you're on the air quickly.
Yeah, hi, Greg.
Heather, did you hear your boyfriend was on?
Oh, my God. I've still got laryngitis. I've just been listening for the last 20 minutes. But
yeah.
But these shows with Patrick McGoohan, I love them myself because, of course, I'm older than you. And I really like those shows a lot. And it was all about not succumbing to mind control. Societies and other people's vicious types of mind control. And he was constantly... Getting above it. And I think it's totally relevant to the kind of crap people are subjected to today, and they don't even know it.
Yeah.
So it was a great show. Yeah.
Amazing it could even get made.
Yeah.
We're living in a whole different world. When you watch this show, a lot of these programs from the 60s, we're so constrained today.
I think they should put this show
creatively.
Back. It should be back on. This show, his book, The Prisoner, should be back on.
Well, we might see it again.
Yeah.
It's on DVD. People can get it and review it and watch all 17 episodes and even see one episode that wasn't very that wasn't screened, I believe, in the United States because of the Vietnam War. They felt, the CBS felt that it reflected on this, that it was making statements about the Vietnam War.
Well, it was always making statements, but I think the reason why he wouldn't kiss a woman was because, myself, it doesn't matter how wonderful a plot is or anything like that, once they introduce romance into it, I can't stand it. I prefer to just have it's a purist attitude about these things.
I know the other show that I liked was The Invaders, and Roy Thinnes, in that program, the outline that was given by Larry Cohen, said that he never was distracted in doing his work by women. It was interesting in the Bible that they had for it. So that was... I always thought that was fascinating, and I noticed that when I was a kid. Also, it made it more kid-friendly, I think, because you not so much with Danger Man and The Invaders was that, you know, kids, young boys would maybe, you know, not want the love stuff. They want to just see action.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, we're off now, and we're back with, we're now going to Choice Cuts with Rebecca Tucker and Colin Medley.
A newer guy.